Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD's continuing 2017-2018 preseason coverage. This is one of our favorite shows of the entire year. This is our preseason Under the Radar show, where we spend the next 45 minutes to an hour going through all 22 what we consider Under the Radar conferences. These are typically the single bid conferences. Let me start, before we go to a little more of the definition of Under the Radar, let me start by introducing the people we have here. First, off to one side of me, I've got David Griggs for some reason. I don't know. We've got John Stalica.
I mean, each group needs, they need brains and they need sex appeal, and it's just hard for me to do both, but I managed to get it done.
Okay. We also have John Tytel down there, and we have somebody new joining us for this evening. Rocco Miller is joining us. Rocco is a bracketologist. He's got his own website, bracketeer.org. You can also follow him on Twitter. Great insight into lots of things related to college basketball. But Rocco, thanks for joining us. And why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi, Chad. Appreciate it. And I'm happy to be on the show today. I've been covering college basketball, following it my whole life, and started the website about 6 years ago. Last year, finished in the top 15 bracketologists nationwide. So hoping to build on that and just always trying to soak up knowledge. So it's good to be part of the group here.
All right. And what is that Twitter handle again? I'm sorry, I didn't have it right in front of me. But
yeah, no problem. It's at Rocco Miller and the number 8. So Rocco Miller 8.
Rocco Miller 8. So make sure you follow him also if you're not doing so already. But Rocco is joining us for our Under the Radar show. And David, we like to start all of our Under the Radar shows that we do weekly throughout the year with a definition of what it means to be under the radar. So I'm going to let you handle that.
Well, let's see. It's been about 5 months. Let me see if I can remember it. But it's any conference that isn't typically a multi-bid league. Now, sometimes these leagues will get multiple teams, but not average. So it's not. So that would exclude who would not be under the radar would be the Power Five, and then the other four regular multi-bid leagues, which is the Mountain West, although they're on the fringe of it, the West Coast, the A-10, and the Big East. And the other disqualifier is that if a team is in the human polls, because anybody that's in the top 25 by definition is not under the radar.
Yeah, the American also, there's a total of 10 conferences that are not under the radar. Last year we graduated the West Coast up out of under the radar, and I think it's going to stay there for a while the way Gonzaga and St. Mary's are. But if you do want to find out about those conferences, look up on the website up there somewhere. There is a 2017-18 season previews tab. You can find on there links to all the podcasts we've done for each of those other conferences. Let's go ahead and get started right into these conferences, though. And let's start. We're going to go through them alphabetically because that's as good of an order as I can figure out. We're going to start in the America East. Stalica, let me start with you. What do you like in the America East this year? Is there a team that you're looking at?
Well, you have to go back to last year where Vermont had run through the table, and they're going to have a big test right out of the bat when they go to Kentucky. So if they're somehow able to pull a rabbit out of that hat, look the hell out when they get into America East play this year.
Yeah. Rocco, let me bring you in here on this. So this Vermont team was perfect in the America East last year, starts the season with Kentucky, but pretty much everybody back from what I understand.
Yeah, they've got a full team back from last year. They were really, really, really tough. And I remember on one of the earlier podcasts, you guys talked about how close they were to beating Purdue in the first round last year. So that's going to, I think, build a lot of confidence for them. And then as we come into this year, how interesting is that Kentucky game with all the youngsters on Kentucky? I think that should be some must-watch TV. And if you're watching football, watch it later. But as the season goes on, you know, they travel to Bucknell, they travel to Marquette. They're going to play Yale, who may or may not have Mekhi Mason at that time. So that should really get them ready to thoroughly dominate this conference, I would assume. I think, a couple other notes I have is, you know, UMBC might be a team to keep an eye out for. They had a plus 13 win turnaround last year. Yeah. And it was their first year head coach, Ryan Odom, that led that. So they're really building some momentum, and I understand they got a good transfer coming in. And then, of course, Boston University will probably be their main competition. So should be a fun year in the league, and Vermont will be a team to keep an eye on all year.
Yeah. Just to build on that, UMBC, one of the best stories in college basketball last year, although, like, just – how abysmal they had been, not just the year before, but many, many years in a row before that, for them to have that dramatic of a turnaround, just a tremendous job. And again, this year, I don't think they're as good as Vermont, but they're going to be one of the better teams in the league. And that's important, maybe not so much in November and December, but like with this tournament being formatted at campus sites, they could be hosting the semifinal game.
Yeah, one other note for the America East, you've also got UMass Lowell eligible for the postseason for the first time ever this year. See if they can possibly try to do what Northern Kentucky did last year by making the first field of their first year, though I doubt it.
I seriously doubt it.
Albany should also have a good team this year. Just keep an eye on them.
Right, we will definitely. But let's turn on to the over to the next conference here, the Atlantic Sun. Tytel, let me bring you in here. Is there somebody in the Ace Sun that you're looking at here as the potential champion?
So Dunk City returns as the defending champion, who made it to the NCAA tourney before losing to Florida State only by 6, and they bring back a ton of seniors in Travius Simmons, Christian Terrell, Brandon Goodwin. They got Joe Dooley returning as conference coach of the year. Schedule looks decent. They're going to be tested by Wichita State. They have Middle Tennessee, I believe it's twice within like 2 weeks, so that's going to be quite the wake-up call, as well as Rhode Island. I think it's Dunk City's to lose, so I will go with FGCU.
And Tytel, you missed a stat that I thought you would definitely hit there on this Gulf Coast team, bringing in Shaunte Rogers' son, 5'3", Darnell Rogers, as a freshman this year. Smallest player at D1, most likely.
Definitely. It ruined my whole interview of Junior Robinson the other day, who was 5'5 and the smallest player last year. So I'll have to do a little editing later, but good luck to Mr. Rogers.
Okay. David, beyond Gulf Coast, though, what about Lipscomb? That was the team that I actually picked to potentially win this conference.
Yeah, Lipscomb is pretty strong. Again, they finished strong. They have a lot of players coming back, but I know you picked them. I still like Gulf Coast more.
Rocco, do you agree that with everyone else that's Gulf Coast then?
Yeah, it's Gulf Coast to win the league. I think Lipscomb's their only real competition. I think the rest of the league got plummeted with guys leaving school either by transfer or graduation. If you look at the KenPom rankings right now, I know it's all based on a lot of returning players. There's nobody inside the top 280 outside of Lipscomb and FGCU. So it really looks like a two-dog race. And plus, with the campus sites being the location for the tournament, Florida Gulf Coast should cruise with maybe a good game against Lipscomb in the final. One note on Gulf Coast, despite how amazing their schedule is, I really can't foresee them getting in a large bid, even if they win half those games, because this league is going to have so many teams in the bottom 280, from 280 to 351. It's just going to, you know, if they lose any of those games, it's going to set them back quite a bit.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be – you probably have to go close to undefeated in non-conference play and in conference play to get it.
Yeah, there's a gun to their head every night, so it's just going to be too much.
Right. Salika, how about the Big Sky, where I think you want to talk about me, don't you?
Yeah, we want to talk about you, your brother Nate, and probable Big Sky Player of the Year, Victor Sanders. And, of course, we're referring to the Idaho Vandals, who last year they made it to the semifinals of the Big Sky Conference Tournament. But this year they've already been picked by, I believe it's both the media and the coaches, to win the Big Sky Conference.
They have been, but David, I think that this Big Sky could be a real fun league this year. There's several teams, including Montana, Montana State, Weber's always in there, Northern Colorado.
Yeah, Northern Colorado, I don't know. They weren't really on my radar. What do you think of them? I didn't expect them to be that good, but you're right. Like, typically, we're used to seeing this being Weber State and Montana and a bunch of also-rans, but this year, the top is going to be a little more crowded. And the other reason I'm happy is that this conference has finally greatly enhanced their streaming. It isn't as archaic as before.
Rocco, they have better coverage from the Big Sky, and you being out west there, I don't know how much Big Sky you follow or not, but they had some awful streaming for a few years there.
Yeah, definitely. I've tried to watch the tournaments in the past. It's been tough. But they did do a digital media day this year, so that's a great sign for all of us that like technology, unlike the Big Sky the last 50 years. But on Northern Colorado, they're an interesting team. They get four of their starters back. They went on a trip to the Virgin Islands over the off season. I guess coach's quotes were really positive on how the team's coming together. So I'm going to keep my eye on them. I do believe Idaho has the most talent, of course, because Chad Sherwood's on the team. So I've got Idaho winning the regular season, but I think when it gets down to Reno, when we get down to who's going to get that bid, I think Weber State with their coaching and their talent and the fans that show up in Reno, they're going to have a chip on their shoulder after losing the championship game last year in overtime. So I'm penciling in Weber State to steal that championship away. But again, it's about five or six teams that can actually win it.
Yeah, should be a fun one. Also, note that they actually have television coverage this year for the quarterfinals and semis for the first time in
many years. Is that on Altitude?
No, it's actually going to be on 11 Sports, unfortunately. So it's not a network that anybody actually gets, but it will be televised.
Chad, that may have been the most useless information you've said in weeks.
Okay, thanks for buzzing.
They know they have to upgrade to 11 Sports. So
yeah,
right. Tytel, how about the Big South Conference? This is a league that generally gives us about a 15 or 16 seed, as I recall, most years.
True, only because they don't have a 17 seed yet, but we'll see how the committee shakes out. Asheville is certainly the pick. I think that they bring back some decent talent, and they've had a nice run the past several years. Winthrop obviously made the tournament last year, but Asheville has great seniors, Kevin Vanatta, Ahmad Thomas, Alec Winook, W-N-U-K, spell it, pronounce it however you want, and a major schedule. They play Vandy, Clemson, St. Mary's, Rhode Island, a lot of tourney teams and power conference teams. So Nick McDevitt, the reigning conference coach of the year, I think he can get his team back to the tourney, but Winthrop is still Winthrop, so we'll see.
Yep. And Pat Kelsey is still there at Winthrop after they're gone back again. He's there this week, right, David?
This week he is. Yes.
Okay. David, is there anybody else besides Asheville that you would be looking at here?
No, just a note about this conference in general. It's always been fun to watch because in the latter half of the season, like after the first round of conference play, it seems like there's about two games that separate eight teams every year. And now that it's at campus sites, it's even more exciting. I don't like them as much as you do, but I agree that Campbell is much improved. And as far as Buies Creek, North Carolina, if any of you all are looking for a true getaway, I'm telling you, Buies Creek is the place for you. It's near nothing.
Stalika, you had a comment about him?
I'm disappointed in the puppet because he brings up Campbell, but he doesn't bring up Chris Clemens, who has a pretty good chance to lead the nation in scoring this year. He was single-handedly responsible for Asheville being knocked out of the tournament early last year.
Yeah, Clemens scored 25.1 points a game last year. Rocco, another team that to kind of keep an eye on in this conference, I think it's this Liberty team with Richie McKay, the head coach, a lot of players back from last year as well.
Yeah, Liberty's a team I'm keeping track of. I think they raised some eyeballs, even though it was an exhibition game, by blowing out VCU last week. So we'll keep an eye on them. But I think I agree with the rest of the group that Asheville's the clear favorite, and I anticipate them to win the regular season and the tournament.
Yeah, Liberty, just a quick note on them, more administratively than personnel-wise, they are really upping the amount of money that they're putting into athletics, so it's kind of – interesting and fun to watch them climb the ladder a little bit. If they're not on the top of the league this year, I think they're going to get to the point to where they're regular league front runners, which is an upgrade. I remember when they were typically at the bottom, but still won the conference tournament.
Yeah, and they beat Baylor in football this year. So
yes, as has everyone Baylor has played.
That's right. So impressive for them.
Well, we were talking about some lousy streaming that the Big Sky has upgraded from. Rocco, staking out West here, a conference that has not upgraded its lousy streaming from what I've seen so far. The Big West, real tough conference to watch, except for their occasional ESPN3 games.
In Hawaii. Hawaii's is pristine.
And Hawaii's games. But what do you like going into this conference, especially being out there in California, a conference with eight out of its nine teams being in your state there?
Yeah, well, it's tricky. I mean, it's an ugly conference. I anticipate the winner, again, going to the play-in game. I think UC Irvine brings the most back, and they have the most proven coach in Coach Turner. So you know, I've got them penciled in now. But a team to really keep an eye on that I think Titel could probably agree with is UC Santa Barbara with Pasternak coming over for a couple of reasons. He's bringing some talent back. Their point guard, Vincent, had an injury early last year, but he's by far their best player. That led to a horrible year for them and their coach retiring. But I really keep my eye on Santa Barbara because they have some talent. They have a lot of good transfers sitting out this year. So they are probably the future of the year unless that FBI investigation from Arizona catches up to Pasternak. But, yeah, right now I'm going with Irvine and keeping my eye on Santa Barbara mostly.
Well, Titel, let's ask you that. I mean, how about the Santa Barbara team, Pasternak, over a team only won six games last year, though?
How can I pick against a team that has an Ivy League transfer in Leland King and an Arizona former assistant in Joe Pasternak? I mean, this team was built for me. Our first trivia question of the night, Coach Pasternak was a student manager for a Hall of Fame coach in the Big Ten back in the day. Name that coach.
I don't know. That's my hot take.
Bob Knight.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm surprised we have not heard about the team that I actually thought was going to win the Big West this year. I'm going outside of your state there of California, Rocco. I'm going out to Hawaii. I am very high on this team heading into this year with four starters back. Mike Thomas missed all of last season, or most of it at least, with an injury. He was one of the top players of the conference. I think that this Hawaii team could be the team to beat here. David, you seem to agree with that.
Yeah, I really like this Hawaii team. And again, it's been just a real tumultuous few years from being on probation but being allowed to play to going to the round of 32 to being on, you know, because the probation was delayed to getting it lifted last year, wasn't it? They actually got it removed, or did they?
It was 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago, so my mistake. But again, like all of the turnover and all of the crap that they've had to deal with, I'm just amazed at, like, the job that the coaching staff there has done to get them through that. And I think, yeah, as down as the Big West was a year ago, I think that I like them as much as anybody this year with four starters back.
And I would just make a note here that I'm expecting absolutely nothing out of Reggie Theus and Cal State Northridge this year once again, despite the fact that some followers of ours on Twitter seem to believe that Reggie Theus was an amazing coach of some sort. Just want to throw that out there. But Stalika, let's swing over to the Colonial now. And what are you looking at here? This may be one of the more exciting conferences in all season we have coming up here with I think it'll be some real good battles.
Yep, you have to go to the Palmetto State, and that would be the College of Charleston. It came up a little bit short in the title game last year against UNC Wilmington, but many of the pieces are back for who I think it's Earl Grant who's coaching there.
Yes, it is.
I'm not sure they're going to be an at-large contender, but they should definitely be a clear favorite in my mind as far as the Colonial goes this year.
Yeah, Titel, I believe you had a chance to speak to Earl Grant recently, didn't you not?
I did. Super nice guy. He's been an assistant to Greg Marshall both at Wichita State and Winthrop, so he's got a great track record under a great coach. He's the defending conference coach of the year. And I love the backcourt. It is so deep. Joe Cheeley, Cameron Johnson are seniors. Marquise Pointer, a junior. Grant Riller, a sophomore. These are all guys with postseason experience. They came this close to beating Colorado State in the NIT last year. I really like their chances. And they face Wichita in non-conference play, which is going to be great to see Grant going against his old school.
Yeah, and you want to speak about coaches have done an amazing job. I mean, Grant inherited a complete mess there at Charleston and has done an amazing job. David.
Yes, he has.
Down in Towson, and it's another guy who's done an amazing job in this conference. Yeah,
Towson was a centenary winner, although I still don't think we should have given it to them, which is the worst college basketball team. It's an award we give out every year. More on that. But Pat Scarry took them over, and not only were they the worst team, they were looking at a postseason ban for probation, and he has taken them all the way up to where this year it looks like that they could at least be in the discussion for the conference title. I really like this Towson team. They're one of three teams in this league I really like, along with College of Charleston, who I think could be fringe bubble, and Elon, another team that was good last year and that has a lot of it back this year. So, but yeah, the job all three of those coaches have done, but in particular, Pat Scarry. I mean, this team was abysmal. I mean, this was a team that would not make the Division II tournament and probably not even close had they been playing at that level. To be where they are now, it's just a dramatic turnaround.
Yeah, Elon, Matt Matheny has done an amazing job there as well. Team's never been to the big dance. Has a shot this year. But Rocco, what are your thoughts on these top three teams in the Colonial? Are you on the Charleston bandwagon as well?
I am. And I think the tiebreaker for me, I mean, I do think Charleston's just a nudge ahead of Towson. And are we calling them Elon or Elon? Because I think out west we call him Elon. But anyway, I'll have to figure that out.
I always called him Elon, but David Elon makes some stuff up. So.
Okay, perfect. Either way, I think they're legit and they have a chance to get through. I think a big difference is that, of course, the conference tournament being in North Charleston. They'll be packing the house for all the Cougar games there. I do like Towson as well because of their rebounding presence. I think they're a top 10 national rebounding team. And I think when we get into March, a really important factor is the possession game and being able to control the possession game. So if they're getting, you know, one shot stops down the stretch, they can really go in and upset a Charleston at home in the tournament. So I agree. Those are the top three I'm looking at. And Wilmington's new coach will be really interesting coming from North Carolina. He's going to want to go up tempo and run and gun. And so CB McGrath. So that'll be a fun team to watch on the as the season goes along.
All right. Well, let's turn over to Conference USA now. Steve, I know you want to discuss them a little bit, so let me start with you. I know, Rocco, you want to discuss them as well, but this may be a conference that merits a few more minutes than some of the other conferences we've been discussed because there's a lot of interesting stories here. But Sleek, let me start with you on Conference USA. Do you have a pick here?
I'm going to go 1-2 with Middle Tennessee edging out fellow travel partner UAB.
All right. And Middle Tennessee bringing back Giddy Potts. Rocco, you've also got Nick King coming in from Alabama. I was trying to get his name there off the top. I had to look for it, but interesting story there. You know, can they come back again, or are we looking at a team like UAB, especially with Nick Norn back healthy now after he went down in game one last season and completely ruined UAB's season?
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. I think Middle Tennessee is, I think they're going to end up taking the regular season crown. I think replacing the two front court guys, Upshaw, being the leader of that front court being gone, it's going to take them a while to get their rhythm and having the transfer come in and get their mesh together. But I think, you know, it's going to be a really tight race between Middle Tennessee, Louisiana Tech, Old Dominion, and even UAB. So, you know, I think one thing that's really interesting is this conference tournament's moving to Frisco, Texas. And, you know, that really throws a different dynamic from what they had in Birmingham, which was a little more central for the majority of the schools. So you got a team like Old Dominion who's going to be possibly 1, 2, or 3, but they've got to come all the way from Virginia down to Texas and try to win, you know, 3 games in 3 nights or 3 games in 4 nights, however the format is set up. So with all that being said, I actually think Louisiana Tech will end up taking the auto bid. And looking at Middle Tennessee's schedule, and some of the new parts to their team, I just don't think they'll get the non-league wins they'll need to get in that large consideration.
We'll get into this later, but moving to the Cowboys complex in Frisco, Texas is actually a sane decision compared to another conference.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I know which one you're talking about.
Tytel, another story we've got to discuss if we're discussing Conference USA is Western Kentucky, and it's a little bit of craziness this offseason, which ended up with them not getting the players that could have had them right at the top of the conference, though.
Might you be referring to a gentleman named Mitchell Robinson, perhaps?
I probably am, yes.
I try to keep track of McDonald's All-Americans and where they go, not just for the heck of it, but because if you look back at the past 30-plus years of the NCAA tournament, you usually need a McDonald's All-American to win the NCAA tournament. I believe the only one off the top of my head is Maryland in 2002, when they had guys like Lonnie Baxter and Juan Dixon, but nobody who was a McDonald's guy. It's happening every year, not just with guys like Kentucky and Duke and Carolina, but even players like Gonzaga has some now and stuff. So the fact that Western Kentucky had a chance, had one signed and in school, I thought gave them not a chance to win the title, but a chance of good things to come. Now that's all gone away.
Yeah, he's well, this week, he might be back next week.
David, I want to talk one other team in Conference USA, and that's our good friend Tim Floyd at UTEP. The numbers here, 2-13 they started the season last year, 13-4 after that. If we get that second half team, we may have a contender here.
Yeah, and again, it was one of the more dramatic turnarounds, and you just wondered where it kind of came from. I mean, they were so abysmally bad, and they were so hot at the end. I think that you had picked them to win the conference tournament, didn't you?
I did. They're the only team I think that I've ever actually picked to win both the Centenary Award and a conference tournament in the same year.
And you just – yeah, Tim Floyd, maybe not one of the greatest guys out there, but he has been a really effective coach. And, you know, what a dramatic turnaround. And you kind of look at them, I think they're going to be in the mix as well. And Conference USA, again, the bottom of it looks like the Southland or worse. But now you've got a lot of the teams. You got Middle Tennessee, who's been to the round of 32 2 years in a row. You got UAB, who was a bust last year, but that was due to injury. And they have a big piece of that team back. You have Western Kentucky, who at least should be formidable. I mean, I don't know where they're going to end up because of their personnel and are they going to mesh or not. But the top five or six teams in this league are not awful.
No, they're not. I mean, you look at a team like Louisiana Tech with the trifecta of guards.
Yeah, Louisiana Tech, yeah.
Boykins, Harris, and Bracey. You obviously UAB with Nornet Point and the mayor of Blockingham there, William Lee.
Yeah.
Could be a fun season in Conference USA, although it's, you know, still going to be a one big league, but it should be fun. Probably the biggest problem they have is too many teams. So you get five or six, you know, Florida Internationals and Florida Atlantic, and all that garbage on the bottom that kind of ruins what otherwise could be a really great league.
Yeah, and if you want to pay $15 a month or whatever it is, you can watch the league.
I do pay, but that's
yeah. So do I. We get them all.
Delica, let's turn over to the Horizon League now, and this is another league that that was provided us with probably the craziest conference tournament that I've ever seen, or maybe second to that Great West tournament where every game was a 1 point game, but just an amazing tournament where you end up with a 4 seed winning it all without pulling a single upset and a 10 seed in the championship game last year.
Yeah, but the exception of Northern Kentucky, the tournament was completely upside down. Besides Northern Kentucky, the other star of the tournament was Milwaukee, who was a 10th seed and had also gotten upset after upset themselves. And their coach, Laval Jordan, actually moved on to Butler in the offseason.
Yeah, there's 10 teams in the conference, by the way.
Yeah, there is a new addition to the Horizon League this year. Valpo has moved on to the Missouri Valley. IUPUI coming in from the Summit League, joining the Horizon League. Probably not going to be a factor this year. Definitely not going to be a factor.
No, they won't be.
But Rocco, who do you like to win the Horizon League this year?
Yeah, I'm going with Oakland. I think, you know, they have a heck of a lot of talent coming back. A lot of people right now, if you're reading some of the preseason articles out there, have them in their top 50. You know, I don't think this league's strong enough to warrant them to get an at-large bid or anything like that. But they'll have some good competition from Northern Kentucky, who is the defending champion by virtue of all those upsets. But they are bringing back some of their key returning players, including Drew McDonald, who was a great player last year, so he should be bringing them back confident as well. And then we have UIC, who's another one of those teams, much like UMBC that we talked about earlier, who had a 12-win improvement last year, and now they bring back 4 returning starters. So maybe this is a year where the Flames could sneak in. So we'll see.
And Kevin Dixon went out early last season for UIC, and he's back healthy again. There's just another piece there.
That's right.
I really like this NKU team. I mean, I know that they were 4th in the league overall last year, but I think they won. I think they finished 11-1 on the year. I mean, just really came thundering down the stretch, and they have everybody back. And I know that they couldn't hit water had they fell out of a boat. They shot the ball so horrendously bad against Kentucky. But they're typically not a bad shooting team, and I think they can make quite a bit of noise. It's kind of disappointing that they don't really have the out-of-conference matchups that you wish they did, but I think they could make quite a bit of noise in the Horizon.
Yeah, I don't know. I really like this Oakland team.
I like Oakland.
You probably have the two best players in the conference there, and Walker and Hayes. Plus, Titel, you add in Kendrick Nunn, who, assuming he got rid of his off-court problems that he had in Illinois, could be a force for this team.
You can assume that. One of the things that stood out from my season previews was my interview with Greg Campy. A lot of coaches are all about cliches and stuff, but he's been around 34 years, so I think he's past that. He might win his 600th career game this season. He said, I've never had this much talent on the same roster. He'll have, like, a good senior class and then a good sophomore class, and by the time the sophomores are good, the seniors are gone. He said he's never had so much talent together at once. Like, he really sees big things, and everybody seems to be talking about them on the internet. Like, their schedule gives them chances. I mean, Syracuse, Kansas, Michigan State, they can knock off one of those three. Like, an at-large is possible, and even if they lose to the other two by 50, they're supposed to.
Well, you just kind of stole my thunder from the end of the show here, because I really like this Oakland team enough that they are my they are basically will be my top of all the under-the-radar schools heading into this season, and they are a team that I think could be an at-large possibility. Tycho, let me stick with you, actually. Let's go to the next conference, the Ivy League. I think you've got a few Ivy League guys, as I recall, right?
I'm not familiar with that conference. Do they have a conference? Oh, they do have a conference tournament now. That's great. It's going to be – sadly, I don't think Penn will be making its return to the top of the leaderboard. Princeton was the show last year. They had the conference tourney MVP in Miles Stevens, the conference coach of the year in Mitch Henderson, and they have an assistant coach named Kerry Kittle, who you might have heard of. The team was loaded, but they lost so much scoring and leadership from a senior class that graduated or transferred elsewhere, and the schedule is very tough. Butler, Miami, and they might have to play USC twice. This is a preseason top 10 USC team, I might add. So I think there's room for Harvard or Yale to unseat them, but I really think it's a coin flip. I don't see any team as head and shoulders above the others.
So you're not as high on this Harvard team. David, how about you? Where are you on this Harvard team?
I think they could be fringe bubble or even inside the bubble. I like them a lot. And again, that's it, the funny thing about the Ivy League is that you never really worried about that. Like, they had some compelling out-of-conference games, but you're like, well, there isn't the pressure to play their way inside the bubble because there's no conference tournament. So it all comes down to league play, and that's no longer the case. But I think Harvard could do it. I think they could go into the conference tournament, maybe not needing to win it.
Oh, Rocco, you on board with that? Do you think we may have a – I believe it would be the first ever at-large bid out of the Ivy League if Harvard gets upset?
I think out of anybody that we're going to discuss today, they've got as good a shot as anybody just because they have the veteran leadership. They have an established coach, that Tommy Amaker, that can lead them. I think it's just, you know, they got to get a couple key non-league wins. And the good news for them is at least the top four should have solid RPIs between Princeton and Yale and Penn to go along with Harvard. So they'll of course, you need to get a couple of huge wins early on, and then it'll be fun to follow. That's a segue kind of with how I see the league playing out, at least at this very early stage, which we're all going to be wrong about. I do see Harvard winning the regular season title. And then I think when we get down to March, we're going to see a healthy Mekhi Mason and a potential, you know, put the Yale team on their back and take that auto bid away, and potentially against Penn, who's playing at home, who may be able to knock off Harvard in that 1-4 semifinal game. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, let's move over to the Metro Atlantic, which is always one of our favorite conferences. And I just got to pull this up here because this is my favorite thing about the Metro Atlantic. And there it is. Jimmy Air Handshake. one of the great head coaches out.
Yeah.
giving handshakes to nobody at all. David, I know you're a big fan of the Metro Atlantic. Maybe in a down year for the conference this year, but what are your thoughts on it heading into this season?
Right. I've been real big. Well, last year I was real big on Siena, and they kind of let us down in a big way. But Monmouth has been the class of the league. It's just unfortunate that they were passed over by the selection committee, although last year I don't know if they really deserved it, but I thought that they were the best team, and it sucked that despite being the best team, they were forced to go play what was virtually a road game to try and get the automatic bid. I don't think we have anyone in there this year that could really contend for an at-large. Winthrop is sort of reloading, or not Winthrop, I'm sorry, Monmouth is sort of reloading a little bit. It's kind of hard. I mean, Iona, they're always going to be up there. Patsos' team is going to be up there. That one's going to be fun, too.
Sleeka, you had a comment about the Metro Atlantic.
We might be seeing a bit of a role reversal this year because for the past, you go back, what is it, 3 years ago where Iona was a clear favorite and they actually stumbled because of Manhattan, the title game. But the past 2 years, Monmouth was the clear favorite as far as a regular season, and Iona was just laying in the weeds in Albany to claim the crown each time.
Yeah.
Could Monmouth possibly pull surprise now that the pressure is not on them to win this year?
I don't know how Monmouth gets by without Justin Robinson. He was the heart and soul of that team, and he has now graduated. My pick in the conference was Fairfield just because they're one of the few teams with a lot of returning veterans, but it's going to be a fairly even and maybe not that great of a season for the Metro Atlantic, you know, looking at a much lower seed line, I think, than they've been accustomed to the last few years.
Right, because, I mean, they've been hovering around the 13 and 14, and they've had teams, like, pushing for the bubble, like Monmouth just missed it 2 years ago, and now it's kind of looking like a 15. But this is still, I mean, it's one of those leagues that's still a lot of fun, and it should still be really compelling. You got the Manhattan-Iona rivalry. Monmouth and Iona has really picked up some steam. I don't know. It's just an entertaining conference. Even if there isn't a fringe bubble team in it.
Well, Rocco, you do also have the defending CIT champions in St. Peter's there as well from my home state.
The Peacocks.
Here. Yeah, and St. Peter's, they took a blow over the offseason when Quidair Welton signed with a pro team overseas. So I think, unfortunately, they fall back down to the bottom half of the conference. I thought before that, before he left, that they were going to be a fun team to follow. Unfortunately, I still think they have the horses to be at the top. But I agree. I think Iona's a head and shoulders above, and they should go in this time as the favorite. To John Stalika's point, Tim Clues has been able to pull a rabbit out of his hat the last few years, coming as the underdog team. But an underdog team to look for this year might be Manhattan. They have four of their starters back. They have a great rivalry with Iona as well as Monmouth. So watch out for Manhattan. But I ultimately think Iona gets in. And I agree that with Fairfield, they'll be a contender. Tyler Nelson would be the player of the year. He's a force down low.
Well, Tytel, let's turn over to the Mid-American Conference here, a conference that one point about 5 or 6 years ago was routinely putting teams near the bubble, potentially in the at-large bid discussion. Not really there anymore, but what do you see out of this conference this season?
I see a very difficult conference to pick just because there's 12 teams and half of them are going to have a winning record of like 10 and 8 or 11 and 7 in conference. I think there's just a lot of talent both in all over the Ohio, Michigan, greater metro area. Kent State, our returning champ who made the tourney, lost a lot of guys, so I don't think Rob Senderoff can get back there. In terms of who's going to make it, like, I don't really see anybody head and shoulders above. Ball State has a lot of guys in the backcourt, like Jeremy Taylor, Taylor Persons, and John Trill Walker. And you got to love Coach James Whitford, who was an assistant to some guy named Sean Miller. But I think it's wide open in the MAC.
Well, I'll tell you, the team that I'm focusing on is Western Michigan, actually. I think, Thomas Wilder is that star type of player. They got four returning starters. They got a seven-footer in Seth Dugan. David, how about you? Where are you looking at for the MAC?
It's hard to pick, and again, that's my hot take. I don't really know because again, there's so much parity. There's so much parity in this conference.
Yes, yeah. Stalika, how about you? Western Michigan, maybe Buffalo team. I've heard some talk about. What are you looking at for this conference?
It's certainly not going to be Mother Miami, which is down the road from Miami.
But I could have told you that.
But I'm actually looking further down to on the eastern side of the state to OU, and that's Saul Phillips bunch. Will they finally be able to get over the hump and get back to the NCAA tournament for the first time since John Gross was coached there?
About them, are you – I'm a little surprised since you brought up Saul Phillips that he hasn't gotten them going more than what he has. I mean, I really thought he stepped into a good situation and they would be regular front runners. And while they've been decent, they haven't been as good as they thought or anywhere near as good as his teams at North Dakota State were.
Well, Rocco, you being the new to our podcast here, I got to throw this next conference over to you. The Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, the annual battle for the play-in game. What do you think about it? It's actually a fun league. I mean, we actually do enjoy it, but it's, you know, you're playing for a league championship. You're not playing for anything else beyond that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it does come down to the tournament in Norfolk after you get through those campus site first round games. But it is a lot of fun to watch. I agree. You know, I wrestled with this for a while. I think you could put a case for Norfolk State. You could put a case for NC Central and Morgan State. And I think, you know, with Morgan State bringing back, I hope I don't get his name wrong, but Tileon Kenley and Philip Carr back, who were both on the All-MEAC team, I believe, a year ago. I think that might give Todd Bozeman, plus he has all five starters back, enough to get it done in Norfolk. But, of course, with Norfolk State being basically at home, they're going to be tough to watch. And another little fun nugget for the league is this: he's got to be the youngest head coach in college basketball. Juan Dixon's taken over at Coppin State. So coming from a Division II women's basketball job. So how about that?
Well, David, I think there's one other team that you may be focusing on that I will as well, heading to the season here in the MEAC. Another story of a coach that has built a program from nowhere into something, and that's Bobby Eastern Collins.
Yeah, Bobby Collins at Eastern Shore. I mean, this is, again, was a team that typically ranked in the 340s, now suddenly looking like one of the top three or four teams in the league and maybe in the mix to win the league. Again, a huge turnaround story with really not a whole lot to work with there. The other piece to this is Savannah State. I think we need to mention them real quick. They've announced that their intention is to transition down, although I don't believe they're doing that until the 18-19 season or after the 18-19 season.
So this year and next year as well in D1 still.
Right. And unfortunately, you hate this for those kids. They're on an APR postseason ban, so they won't be able to play in the conference tournament or the NCAA or any sort of postseason tournament. Not that you would expect them to anyway, but you hate when kids that are eligible and everyone that is playing currently is eligible are not allowed to play because of what the players before them did. But that's the kind of the case. And Savannah State had some moments. I mean, they did have a first place finish, and while they really, really struggle a lot of the time, I thought that they, I just kind of hate to see them moving down.
And if you're a KenPom fan, I was going to say, if you're a KenPom fan, Savannah State was actually number one in the country in terms of offensive tempo last year.
Oh, they do play a fun, fast-paced style, but they have no defense at all there for the Tigers. Right. Tytel, I really do this, especially in a preseason podcast, but I was wondering if you could give us a prediction on a single individual game coming up here, being that you're in the D.C. area. Coming up on November 18th, Maryland Eastern Shore is going to be at Georgetown. Who wins the game?
I was expecting the T-minus 32 days until Penn and Howard in D.C. My bad, I was reading the other way there.
That one too, yeah.
Yes, if you'd like to rob my apartment, I will be at Burr Arena for that game. Maryland Eastern Shore is going to be decent this year. I just read a glowing piece about Ewing on ESPN, and obviously I think they were a little too kind to him because I think it's going to be rough sledding for the Hoyas this year, but I will go with the Hoyas, but it's going to be close.
It's going to be close. Let's turn over to the Missouri Valley Conference now. Conference with another conference to change in membership this year. Wichita State, obviously, out to the American. Valpo coming in from the Horizon League. With now, over the past few years here, both Wichita State and Creighton gone from this league. David, a conference that at one point would have put four or five teams in the field is now clearly a single-bid league, though, isn't it?
They appear to be. And while Valpo has been really good the last 2 years, similar to Monmouth, clearly I thought the best team in their conference and was fringe bubble and looked like that they might get in but unable to win their conference tournament. I think that they, while they can be competitive in the Missouri Valley, I don't think that they're as good as they've been the last 2 years. And I don't really expect anyone from this league to be near the bubble. And there's a lot of programs here that I like. I like what Bim Jacobson's done at Northern Iowa. Missouri State is much improved. I think you picked them to finish first. You know, Southern Illinois gets, I mean, it's still a conference full of fan bases that are probably bigger than what most of the casual fans realize. I mean, it is a good, exciting product, but like you said, it's not top heavy enough to put multiple teams inside the bubble like it routinely did before.
Yeah, Rocco, you mentioned Missouri State with four returning starters, plus you bring in the monster Tanvir Bular coming in from New Mexico State. Right. Valpo, you also have in there, it's kind of a wild card. How do they move up from the horizon to the Missouri Valley? Well, what's your thought on this conference?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. It's kind of like hitting the reset button for this league with Wichita moving on. It's everybody's got a fair chance again. They're not going to have to go up against Goliath. So it's going to be a fun year. I think there's going to be a lot of teams protecting home court well. And I think when we get down to the end, we'll see. Actually, I'm going to have Loyola Chicago just barely nip out Missouri State. I loved what I saw for these guys the last couple of years, and these guys have been in the program for a while. And then Valpo will be interesting. It's a nice addition to the league. However, I do think coming out that Ben Jacobson and with Northern Iowa, what they've got coming back, they're going to end up taking this bid and getting it done in St. Louis.
That's a bold pick, but I like it.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's going to come down to coaching, and he's by far the strongest coach, in my opinion.
And Northern Iowa does have one key non-conference game just prior to Christmas, and that's the Corn Sword matchup against Xavier at home.
Gee, I think it's because of your fan there. Tytel, do you agree? Is it Loyola? If you don't want to go Missouri State, you want to go Northern Iowa?
I want to go Valpo, but okay. It's a shame. Like, if they had Alec Peters, I think they'd win the division by, like, six games. Yep. But I don't think they're going to do it this year with the changeover. I'll go with Loyola. I think it'll be very close. I love the roster. Again, very veteran-heavy. A couple of seniors in Andre Jackson and Dante Ingram. Couple of junior guards in Marcus Towns and Clayton Custer. And I like Coach Porter Moser's resume. He was an assistant to Rick Majerus, an assistant to Wim Sanderson. He won a conference title as a player at Creighton. And he's got Drew Valentine as his assistant coach, who's the all-time winningest player in the history of Oakland.
Well, David, one of our favorite conferences, the Northeast Conference. I know you love it. I know I love it. It's some great rivalries. Again, conference that generally is playing for the 16 line, but I don't believe that this conference has ever gotten a team out of the round of 64.
It got a 15 once. I think it got a 14 once.
No, has never won a game in the round of 64.
Oh,
never,
yeah, but I was just saying, it, like, it's not always for the 16 line. Okay. I mean, you don't have to crap all over the Northeast Conference, Jen.
Well, David, I think we are going to the 16 line this year, so why don't you tell me
probably so.
Yeah. Is there a team you're focusing in on?
It's kind of hard to say, like St. Francis of University, not St. Francis Brooklyn, two teams with the same name that are on complete opposite ends of the spectrum this year. But I don't know. I kind of like St. Francis University, some other teams. What do the Blackbirds have this year? I always like them.
They don't have as much, I don't think. Rocco, do you have thoughts on that? Is it St. Francis, Sacred Heart going for the first ever?
Yeah, Sacred Heart. I forgot about them. Out of Connecticut.
Yeah, I think pretty much every team in this league got killed by transfers. I think at least one guy left each roster. I think a few really got hit, like Robert Morris and Wagner. But I've got St. Francis just barely ahead of Fairleigh Dickinson and Mount St. Mary's. Mount St. Mary's has the experience to make a run in the tournament, but I mean, honestly, it's a toss up. So we'll stick with St. Francis.
Yeah, and Junior Robinson, of course, Tytel, who you just interviewed, yes. Convinced that his team can win the conference.
Well, what else is he going to say? Like, they can, but I agree. I think that's more of a one man show. St. Francis, Pennsylvania, has a much more diverse backcourt. Also, I don't know who's making their schedule. St. Mary's, Louisville, and Duke. Good luck.
Let's turn to the Ohio Valley. And, Stalika, I know you love these fun factoids. The Ohio Valley Conference this year is going to be playing its conference. The Ohio Valley Conference has no teams in the state of Ohio. Is going to play its conference tournament in Indiana. It has no teams in the state of Indiana. And the conference tournament is going to be sponsored by visitmyrtlebeach.com. There's no South Carolina teams in the conference either. But the Ohio
got
Valley
a problem with branching out yet?
The closest I can think of is that they're located along the Ohio River, but beyond that, I mean, is Southern Indiana going to be applying for OVC membership pretty soon?
They might be, but the conference does get rid of the divisional play this year. It's a single 12-team, 18-game instead of a 16-game schedule as well. Who do you like to win the league?
I think Belmont probably has the tools to get another regular season crown, but as we've seen for the past 4 years, one seeds do not come out victorious in this conference. Yeah. And look no further than, Ray Harper, who was winning conference tournaments out of nowhere in the Sun Belt in Western Kentucky, and lo and behold, he did it with Jacksonville State last year.
Yeah, Evan Brad's gone from Belmont. That's, I think, I don't know how they make up for that as much, but Ray Harper, David, did it with Jacksonville State. Can he do it again this year?
He can. And again, they kind of came out of nowhere. But even the winning the conference tournament was a surprise. But even prior to that, they were much improved from what they had been. So they had, while not the best season in the conference, it was one of their better seasons. UT Martin is another team that made drastic improvements, and they've been right in the thick of things the last couple of years. I think they're going to take kind of a step back. Murray State, very talented team, but they were talented last year as well, and it just didn't seem like they ever gelled, or they just weren't cohesive. I could see that. If they could bring it together, I think Murray State's really a team to watch, but I have no reason to think that they will. I know Belmont lost a lot, but I still think when you look at the rest of the conference, I still like them better than anybody else.
Well, Tytel, I know you love some of these crazy stats here. Jonathan Stark from Murray State, one of only 15 players in the last 18 years to have a season where he averaged 21 points, 5 rebounds, and 3.8 assists or more per game in the season, doing that last year. Guys like Steph Curry seem to be on that list as well. This guy could take over the game and completely run away with it for Murray State, couldn't he?
Yes, but much like the Mount St. Mary's situation, I think a one- or two-man show is not always the way to get it done, even in a smaller conference. I like Belmont. As you said, they lost a ton. They pay a visit to Washington, so Rocco can check them out.
Yep.
I also don't know who made their schedule, because they have these teams who have been traditionally like bottom tier, but they get Providence and TCU, who unfortunately for them are both going to be, I think, top tier in their conference this year. I love also the Austin Luke. I got to interview him last month, senior guard, amazing shooter and ball handler. And Rick Bird, he's been the conference coach of the year 3 of the past 5 years. He's won 700 games, like advantage Belmont.
I guess what I'm all thinking with Stark there at Murray State, though, is this is the kind of guy that could carry his team on his back for 3 games and steal the automatic bid, even if they don't win the regular season.
Yeah,
which is pretty much what he almost did last year. Rocco, over in the Patriot League, we have another team that could be towing that 12 line type and potentially being in the at-large bid discussion should they trip up, especially if they can pile up a ton of wins. What are your thoughts on the Patriot League?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Bucknell, this team's for real. I think it's going to be a lot of fun with their schedule too. I mean, right here off the bat, we're looking at a trip to Arkansas, a trip to North Carolina, a trip to Maryland. And then, you know, they got St. Joe's later on and they get that Vermont home game, which is for under the radar fans, it doesn't get better than that. I can't find a matchup better than that. As we get into the conference play, I really think they could run the table. I mean, they could really go undefeated in this conference with everything they have coming back. You know, a team to watch out for is Navy. I mean, it would be awesome to see Navy make a run. It's been probably since David Robinson, since they've been in. So they do have a lot of experience. But, you know, the reigning conference player of the year is Fowland. He's back. And this Bucknell team's for real. And they like Tytel was saying about Oakland, I think if Bucknell can pull off an Arkansas win or a Maryland win or maybe both, you know, we'll be talking about them all year in the bubble conversation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if they get both of them, holy crap, yeah.
Exactly, yep.
Yeah, Salika, anybody else even look at in this conference on any serious note?
Well, normally I would go to Lehigh, but they graduated one of their front court players in Tim Kempton last year, so you can't really go there. But another alternative, you can always go up to the roof at BU.
Yeah, yeah. And Tytel, how good is this Bucknell team? Is this team good enough that we were talking about, hey, this team is going to win a game in the tournament?
They could. I love Rocco's prediction that they're going to run the table. At first, I didn't think so, but when you look at them, they bring back most of a starting lineup who are now all seniors and juniors. from a team that only lost to West Virginia by 6 in the tournament, and they all put up amazing numbers on offense. I think the four guys, Fallon, Thomas, Brown, McKenzie, each scored 13 or more points. You bring back Coach Nathan Davis, the 2-time defending conference coach of the year. I think I'll second Rocco's motion. I think they're going to run the table in the Patriot League.
Let's turn over to the Southern Conference, and an interesting stat, I'm sorry, not the Patriot Conference, the Southern Conference, an interesting stat in the SoCon this year. Half the teams are bringing back at least 4 starters. You've got a lot of experience coming back in the SoCon this year, which could make it a real fun season. David, any way you're looking specifically in the SoCon, because this could be one of those wide open conferences as well.
It will be, and I thought your pick to win it was interesting. Samford, I know they finished 7th last year, but another team that has undergone drastic improvements in the last 2 or 3 years after they kind of – Scott Pageant, is it Scott Pageant? Yeah, Scott Pageant kind of inherited a mess there. And I really questioned the hire because he was on the staff of the guy that kind of made the mess. But since taking over, he has drastically improved them. And even though they were 7th last year, they were right in a lot of those games with the big three, East Tennessee State, Chattanooga, a lot of the better teams in the conference. Furman's another team that I kind of like, but I don't know. I don't think it's crazy. It's not who I picked. I think I like Furman a little more, but Samford's not a bad pick with 4 starters back.
Stalika, which way are you going? You want to join me and David on that Samford pick?
I think Furman is probably going to be the team I'm leaning to as far as winning the conference, but also keep an eye on another hot up-and-coming coach in Wes Miller over at UNC Greensboro. He took a pretty dormant program to the regular season title last year, but they fell a game short as far as making the NCAA tournament. I think they take a step back this year, but Wes Miller is another name you'll probably be hearing in the next couple of years as far as future head coaching searches.
I know that we're probably not as big on them, but Wofford, Mike Young, has done an incredible job there this year, and they get a showcase game to open their season in their arena this year. It's kind of cool to see South Carolina going there.
Well, if you want to talk head coaches, you got to talk Mercer as well. Obviously.
Yeah.
Bob Hoffman does an amazing job, and no matter what, he seems to always have that team in contention.
Right.
Rocco, how about the Southland Conference?
The Southland, earlier in the summer, I was all about the Lions of Southeastern Louisiana. I just really like what they have coming back with Marlon Veal. They have I got a couple guys following me down there on Twitter, telling me Veal's the real deal, and I believed in it. But you know, the more I've studied, the more I've researched, I can't get away from Stephen F. Austin coming back and taking control of the conference. But you know, it's definitely not a Stephen F. Austin team that's going to run the table. They're going to lose some games on the road. I mean, we saw what happened last year. New Orleans came out of nowhere, and we thought the entire season they would eventually, you know, lose that lead in first place, and they carried it all the way through, and then they got into the play-in game. It was incredible. And I think it's going to be that kind of year again. And I think Lamar has the player of the year in Colton Wiesbrod. And then you've also got Corpus Christi, who was really strong last year. So they're going to be in the mix. And then we also Incarnate Word has got their first year of eligibility along with Abilene Christian. And Incarnate Word actually pulled off a few upsets last year. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them actually compete.
Yeah, I could see both those teams at least making the top 8 and qualifying for the Southland tournament. But Titel, is this the year that Stephen F. Austin makes up for that awful 12-6 year they had last year in conference play?
We're so used to Brad Underwood's undefeated conference play. I think they're the favorites. You have to remember this team like still has remnants of past tourney success, even if not wins. Ty Charles, he had 14 points in a single-digit loss, in a 7-point loss to Utah in 2015. T.J. Holyfield had 15 in a 1-point loss to Notre Dame in the 2016 tourney. These guys have experience. They have transfers from Big East schools. Leon Gilmore transferred from Creighton. You got guys from Cuba like Ivan Kennedy. They got Kyle Keller, who's an assistant to Bill Self and to Eddie and Sean Sutton. I mean, I like the coaching staff. I like the players. I like everything about Stephen F.
Well, Stalika, going over to the Summit League now, conference down to 8 teams with IUPUI going off to the horizon. South Dakota State, South Dakota, North Dakota State. North Dakota not quite in the conference yet, but
on their way.
On their way next year. One of the Dakota teams winning it this year, you want to go somewhere else?
I'm probably going to go with South Dakota State to repeat. I mean, they had kind of a down year during the regular season last year, but were able to pick up the pieces after North Dakota State and South Dakota later faded. But also keep an eye on Fort Wayne. I'm not expecting Lightning to strike twice like it did with the IU win last year, but it also raised expectations in Fort Wayne that they weren't quite able to match in the regular season last year.
Right, and then by the time the season was over, the win wasn't – it lost a lot of its luster. But I like Fort Wayne, but South Dakota State, I mean, the way that they finished the season last year and what they have coming back, don't you kind of have to think that they're the unanimous front runner here?
Well, you got the nation's leading returning scorer, Mike Dahlm, over 25 points a game last year, coming back to lead them. Rocco, do you agree that South Dakota State's your team here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mike Dahlm might be the best player that we'll talk about today. I know that's a bold statement. We've had a lot of good ones across the under-the-radar scene. But I just think back to last year, you know, like Stolica was mentioning, they made that run from the four-seed position. They have an unbelievable advantage playing in Sioux Falls, so it's usually going to come down to North Dakota State, South Dakota, or South Dakota State, realistically, with the big advantage they have there. But I also think back to the first tournament game when they played Gonzaga, and they actually were right in there with them all the way until about 12 minutes left. I think they were up a couple minutes before halftime. So Mike Dahlm was unstoppable, even from a team that made it all the way to the national championship. So I think this team's got a lot of momentum, a lot of confidence, and they're gonna roll through this league.
Yeah, the one team that I'm looking at here as a potential contender, a couple of them, I think South Dakota could be there. They were the regular season champs last year. I like this Denver team to actually take a step up this year. Now that they finally, I think, fully recovered from the from some coaching problems that they had for many years there. I just say that.
I don't know why he couldn't get – Joe Scott was not a complete imbecile. He wanted Air Force. He wasn't – okay, yeah, he was terrible after that. But I never understood why he just couldn't do better. He wanted Air Force.
Yeah. Denver confuses me. They have so many amazing resources at that school compared to the rest of the Summit League. They should have a much better basketball program. I mean, they're winning national titles in lacrosse.
Yeah.
And they have an amazing athletic department budget. So it's just,
they do.
It's very, very confusing to me.
Right. I don't get it either.
Can I tell a team that pulled off each of the last couple of years some major non-conference upsets over in the Sun Belt was Texas Arlington, but could not get it done in conference play and could not make the tournament, although last year in part due to Kevin Hervey's injury. Is this the year that Arlington finally breaks through?
It's not. I mean, it could be, but I don't think so. I just like that we make fun of all these teams who play non-conference games against these one-name teams we've never heard of, and our defending tournament contender from this league, Troy. Like, it's nice to see somebody who's an actual team. Arlington will be solid. They bring back a great senior class of Eric Neal and Kevin Hervey, and I like Scott Cross, the defending conference coach of the year. If I had to pick a winner, I think two of the favorites are Georgia Southern and Louisiana Lafayette. Georgia Southern has a great junior class, so I think they're actually going to be 1 year away from making a big run under Coach Byington. Lafayette, they have Coach Bob Marlin, who's been there for now 8 years, I believe. They bring in transfers like Brian Williams from a little Big 12 school called Oklahoma State, and they have an amazing senior class. Frank Barley, who himself is a transfer from BYU, Jonathan Stove, Bryce Washington. It's hard to pick against a guy named Jonathan, so I'm going to go with Lafayette.
All right. Well, at least you're not picking Troy over Georgia Southern, because yesterday in an exhibition game, they couldn't even get past Georgia Southwestern, losing them in overtime last night. But Stolica, I know you're a big Sun Belt fan, and at the risk of having to mute you, I'm going to ask you about this conference.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just going to go straight up here. So even as the weather does get cold, 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 I'm going to take Georgia Southern and Tookie Brown as my pick to actually win the league this year. So I think they'll find a way to pass Arlington.
So you think Arlington's right up there with them? You're not on the Louisiana Lafayette bandwagon that Titel was?
I thought they were called they can officially be called Louisiana now.
They can.
I would call them Louisiana Lafayette. David, another team came into this conference last year, Cliff Ellis's Coastal Carolina team. It's just another team kind of like Mercer over in the Southern. You just could never count out, can you?
You can't, although a lot of people are. Surprisingly so. No one is big on them, and I know that they're kind of at the bottom of their talent cycle right now, but I think that they're going to end up, well, not at the top of the league, not at the doormat of it either. They're better than what they're getting credit for.
Rocco, do you agree? Do you think that, and who is your call to win this conference?
Yeah, I'm also going with Arlington. I might change that pick in a couple weeks when we get to see them play at BYU and at Alabama. But even in the past couple of years, UT Arlington's been known to go to Oklahoma and win, and they've had a lot of it. I think they beat Texas as well, so they've been proven themselves in November and December, which can
beat St. Mary's last year.
Yeah, that's right. They beat St. Mary's last year. So you know, we'll see how that plays out. They also got a game at Creighton. They get Florida Gulf Coast at home, which is interesting. So we'll see how that plays out. I agree. Georgia Southern's probably about a year away. I think it comes down to Cajuns, and I think Troy is like Tytel said in the mix. I got Cajuns and UT Arlington top two, with UT Arlington barely getting through.
All right. David, I'm going to throw the SWAC over to you, one of our favorite leagues here. Again, another conference usually fighting for a 16 seed.
Fighting just to get inside the first four, really.
Yeah, fighting to get inside the first four. The SWAC this year, anything we see here, or is it going to be the same as always with Texas Southern?
I think it'll be the same as always. And you kind of, again, Texas Southern should run away from it. They're clearly better than anybody else, but this league in general, and I know someone always has to be at the bottom, but this is a league that actually does pretty well with football in terms of the revenue and the interest. And then when on the basketball side, you have everybody playing the bye games and being on the receiving end. It's not unusual to see multiple SWAC teams not even play a home game at all until January. There have been years where the total number of out-of-conference wins has been less than 10. That's 10 for the whole league. And you just wonder, like, I don't know, like, it's to the point to where you don't even want to poke fun at it anymore because it's just not even funny. It's almost kind of sad. Like, why aren't they playing at even just a slightly higher level? I mean, this league is abysmal. Good grief.
And Tytel, when you look at this league, I don't know what to look at other than the coach, but Mike Davis has had so much success there at Texas Southern. Only one starter back from last year, but can you go anywhere else than his team this year?
I think Mike Davis has a stranglehold on this conference, and he brings back some great players in DeMontre Jefferson, who's only a sophomore and was conference rookie of the year last year at 5'7". We've been talking about so many small players from these small conferences. He continues that. Kevin Scott, his backcourt mate, is a senior who had 13 points against North Carolina. The schedule is ridiculous. Like, I don't want to steal Stalika's thunder, but I have to. If I'm reading it right, Gonzaga, Washington State, Ohio State, Syracuse, Kansas, Clemson, Oregon, Baylor, TCU. Who makes the schedule?
People that want to get paid. And they might actually beat Wazoo, by the way.
Yes, they will.
That is a schedule full of bye games because they need the money. That is nothing other than that. Hey,
right.
But you know what, Rocco? They go undefeated in that schedule. They're going to be a one seed, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't know. Wazoo might bring it down.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, as long as they run the table, they'll be easily a one seed. But yeah, obviously we're looking at a team here that they're actually been doing this every year. So I actually got to see Texas Southern in person last year at Rice when I was down there, and very impressive team. They ended up winning that game in the last minute, and they started the year 4-1 in the first five road games. A couple other quality wins were in there. I think they won at Louisiana Tech.
They did, yeah.
And you know, so this team they might be able to squeeze out a win at Wazoo, a win at Wyoming. They're clearly the best team in the league. It's going to hurt losing Lofton, but they've got enough talent coming back to continue to carry the flag for the SWAC.
Well, David, let's turn to our favorite conference among all these under the radars. We always save the best for last, and that's the Western Athletic Conference, where our beloved Grand Canyon Antelopes have finally become eligible for the postseason. Thunder Dan's team has a shot to go to the Big Dance if they can capture that automatic bid this year. Are they the team?
they're one of them. Lopes up. One of the things the Lopes did not do was schedule up. My God. I get that it's a great place to play, but you have to give yourself more of a chance than what they did. They're at Louisville, and they're actually playing a bunch of bye games where they're the ones buying the game. We'll get into this a little bit, but like a little bit later. But you can't. That's a bad idea to buy that many games, even if you're in a power conference. It's a horrible idea to do that when you're not. I mean, I could see them finishing with a bloated record. In fact, I think they will. They're one of the two best teams in the conference. But what seed line does that actually land them on?
Well, yeah, I mean, they've got a game against St. John's. They also have a game in Illinois, a game against Boise, who's going to be half decent out of the Mountain West. But you're right, they don't have the main chances to move up their seed line. Rocco, are you on the Lopes bandwagon this year?
Well, that's a good question. I actually think they're going to win the regular season. You know, Thunder Dan Marley, and I know how you guys are loving the Lopes. So,
oh yeah.
so yeah.
Well, they're the former team of the people. Former though.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do think, you know, I wish they were playing Louisville right out of the gate with all the turmoil there. That would have been awesome. I think by the time they get to Louisville right before Christmas, they're going to be a little exhausted because 2 days before they have a home game in Arizona against Longwood. So I don't really see them being able to pull off that shocker. But throughout the season, as we look at the WAC conference, New Mexico State's going to be right there. And I actually think with the veterans coming back, when we get to the tournament, I'm actually going to pick Utah Valley to take the title and get their first.
Really?
I like that pick there. David, you kind of attacked me. I had Utah Valley second above New Mexico State.
I'm not getting the Utah Valley love. Now Chad, I realize that you're very nostalgic for the Great West, and that's admirable. It really is. But I'm just not seeing what everybody else is seeing in Utah Valley. And it's not just the two of you, but what is it? Is it the fact that, like, they've been below 500 the last couple of years in conference play?
Well, what I see in Utah Valley is they have a lot of experience, 11 juniors and seniors, and they have a lot of depth. That's what I like about Utah Valley. I mean, you look at Grand Canyon, they've got Josh Braun, who's a star. They've this Oregon transfer, Casey Benson, may or may not be something. He didn't have great numbers there, but he may be able to show some big numbers here. New Mexico State, you've got Zach Lofton, who was last year's SWAC Player of the Year, coming over. Again, should be able to big numbers to be a star there. I don't know that those teams have the depth, so I think Utah Valley has the depth and the experience to potentially surprise.
And just to answer David real quick, I just, for me, it's coming off of how they ended last year. It was pretty impressive how they ended the season by winning at New Mexico State on the road by double figures. Then they get into the WAC tournament, blow out Seattle. They play Bakersfield in an epic four overtime game, lose by one. And then they go into the, the CIT, and they get to the third round of that.
Yeah.
And so all these guys have played a lot of basketball together now. And, you know, when you get into March, I don't know, I'm going with my gut. We're all going to be wrong. It's right. All good.
And I like the four. I mean, I like the top of this league. The bottom of it is just garbage. And I would throw Utah Valley in with the top of the league, along with New Mexico State. I like Chris Jans. He was a coach for 1 year at Bowling Green, did reasonably well, had a tremendous exit from Bowling Green, but he is a good coach. I'm glad to see him getting another chance, and it's a place that's kind of set up for success a lot more than Bowling Green was. I mean, if you can't win 20 games at New Mexico State, Christ, I could win 20 games at New Mexico State. But, you know, and with the addition of Cal Baptist, who is playing their final year in Division II this year, I think that you're going to have four or five teams that are at least CIT or better, even NIT caliber teams, and maybe occasionally do the impossible and get a fringe bubble team out of this. But the Seattle and the rest of, I mean, Chicago State, yeah, is
well, David, no. I'm gonna take issue with them on Seattle, David. They did bring in Jim Hayford over from Eastern Washington, yes, as head coach. He had a ton of success at Eastern Washington. I think he's the right guy to turn that program around.
Yeah, they're already doing a great job recruiting up at Seattle. So watch out for them in the next year or two.
Tytel, your thoughts on the WAC? I know you were nodding your head earlier.
Couple things. We talked about teams scheduling up. Utah Valley, first two games at Kentucky, at Duke, so good luck to Coach Pope. Secondly, I think Zach Lofton has a good chance to become the conference player of the year in back-to-back years in different conferences. I would love to know if any of you happen to know if that's ever been done, because I think that would be an amazing stat. And lastly, if I can educate David real quick on why Utah Valley is legit. Experience, like you said, but also they bring in guys from power conferences. Kenneth Ogbee transferred from Utah. Brandon Randolph transferred from Xavier. Isaac Nielsen transferred from BYU. They don't recruit and get these hotshot freshmen. They go get guys who are D1 major guys, and they bring them to Orem, Utah, and they turn them into a solid team.
Yeah.
And plus, we have that huge Utah Valley, New Mexico State rivalry set off a few years ago by the Brawl, David. One of our.
Oh yeah, I mean, you got to have a little heat there. But
let's run through. I want to run through each of you here. First of all, to find out if you have any final thoughts at all about all these conferences, and also kind of throw the question out there to each of you: is what teams, if any, that we discussed tonight, do you think should they get upset in their conference tournaments, could be seriously discussed by the selection committee come March, that they may be good enough to be an at-large team? Let me start with you.
Who?
John Salica?
Oh, okay. Is he here? It was cutting out on me for a little bit. I want to go back to Oakland for a little bit, because one of their star players, and I think it's Jalen Hayes, he's going to be sitting out the first four games this year because of some academic quote-unquote issues, but this was because for a major he had chosen, he did not get a high enough credit. He didn't necessarily fail the course, but didn't get sufficient credit from Oakland and wound up falling below the, I guess it was the number of minimum semester hours he needed to remain eligible. I believe he was initially going to be suspended for, I think, the first semester, but after getting a waiver, that's been reduced to four games, but it just looks even silly a week after we've heard that UNC decision, hashtag real student athlete.
Tytel, let me go to you with the same question. Any other thoughts?
I think that you guys have sold me on Bucknell and Vermont. I really thought they were just going to be good in their conferences and then a quick exit, but I like their coaches. I like their schedules. I like their veteran experience. So, I'm not picking both of them to win a first-round game by double digits or anything, but I think that they're going to be competitive. I think they're going to each win their conferences handily, and I hope that they can do some damage in their first games in the tournament.
And I agree with you on the Vermont and the Bucknell. These are two teams that could really run away with things and pile up enough wins that they could be sniffing top 25 polls. And should they get an upset in the conference tournament, you'll see everyone saying, oh, well, why isn't this team an 8 seed and the committee gives them a 12, but maybe they still get in. Rocco, let me ask you the same question, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you guys. I think it's Bucknell, it's Vermont, it's Oakland, and it's Harvard, perhaps, that even has the opportunity based on their schedule and how their strength of conference. And I even think Vermont's strength of conference is not really there, but they do have the non-conference games and the opportunity to go undefeated in that league as long as they can get by Albany on the road. So I think it really does come down to those teams. And I think, you know, if you're talking about winning a first-round game or maybe even a Sweet 16, I think it's actually just down to Bucknell and Vermont that has the horses to do that.
Well, David, I know you want to make the case for Bethune-Cookman, so I'm going to go over to you.
Well, it's kind of interesting, and I know Rocco and Tytel's our selection committee guessing expert, and Rocco does the same. And basically, the criteria and the rules are the same no matter who you are. This is under the radar, which is the non-power conferences. And, the committee evaluates them the same way, but you have to kind of take a different path to get there rather than you have to make a case for yourself to the committee at some point that you belong. And if you're not in a power conference, you kind of have to do that at the out-of-conference portion of the season. And we discuss this every year. Like, I realize that some of these teams are really good, but they're at a circumstantial disadvantage. But even with that, you kind of hate to see what some of these teams do, like not playing the big games. St. Mary's not under the radar, but they're kind of a classic example of a team that's not giving themselves the chances they need to. Scheduling Division II teams, and one of the things that makes me totally insane is that they don't ever seem to schedule each other, or at least not as much as they should. And when you look at a team like College of Charleston, they give themselves two or three chances. Yeah. Well, if they fall flat on all three of them, then they've basically taken a – they're going to have to win the automatic bid. I like College of Charleston more than anyone else. I like Vermont a lot. I like Harvard, Oakland, and Bucknell. I think that they're all good enough to do it, but are they giving themselves the chances they need or not? That's kind of the thing. And I know that we kind of – Chad and I and Stalika too pontificate on that all year. Like, why aren't these schools doing more to help their case?
Well, I guess on that note, I do want to finish with one thing here. I do need to issue an apology at the end of our show here to everybody that watched our shows that we recorded yesterday. They're down there on the website somewhere. We did three podcasts at once in the Atlantic 10, the Mountain West, and the West Coast Conference. And we had a real neat feature that we were putting together. David, you were working on this, that if you played all three at the same time backwards, it was supposed to give you a recipe. My understanding was for chocolate chip cookies. I'm going to be excited about that. So I actually got, when I got home from work today, I actually went ahead, David, and this is where I got off of the apology, because I went ahead and played them all together at the same time backwards. And apparently we were somehow hacked, because I got a recording of what message actually came through playing them backwards.
I don't know.
Miles is the best head coach ever.
What the hell, David?
I don't know what that was.
I guess
Dwight is the best coach ever.
Tim Miles.
Tim Miles.
I mean, somebody definitely hacked us. But
I don't know who that was.
On that note, on behalf of David Griggs, John Tytel, John Stalika, Rocco Miller, again, Rocco, thanks for joining us. You can check him out at bracketeer.org. You can check us out at hoopshd.com, and we'll be talking to you again real soon.